Folks, we have a little more than 5 weeks left in 2015, and we need approximately $100,000 to cover our expenses for the year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues, etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2015.
Now, I had a lot of disagreements with George W. Bush on policy, but I was very proud after 9/11 when he was adamant and clear about the fact that this is not a war on Islam.
The government is already spending $500 million a year to provide contraceptives through Planned Parenthood clinics. Why does the government need the little sisters to do Planned Parenthood's work for them?
Long before we arrive in 2015, the church has been told it was on the wrong side of history. And by the way, that may even be true. We may be on the wrong side of history, but we're not on the wrong side of eschatology.
Wisconsin turkey producers love Issues, etc.
Well, to slightly garble a overused phrase, this is not your grandfather's terrorist group. If you go on the internet and you look up ISIS or you look up their famous, now famous, online and in-print magazine, Dabiq, you will find great production values. You will find a lot of guys in fatigues and standing there with weapons or posing on tanks, look like they might need a shave, but the message is right on point. They are appealing to Muslims worldwide, and that there's a reason for that. ISIS believes that it is the new caliphate for all Islam, every Muslim, everywhere. They believe it with all their hearts, and they're willing to die for it, too. This is not just some terrorist who has a hatred toward the West. This is a well-organized, extraordinarily well-funded group, and yet we're told that they have nothing to do, really, with Islam. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. on this Thanksgiving Day, November the 26th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Dr. Craig Evans, professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College, about the theology that drives the ideology of ISIS. After our conversation on Islamic terrorism, we will discuss the Lord's Prayer petition, "Give us this day our daily bread," with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy. Dr. Craig Evans is a regular guest, professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College and co-author of the new book, "Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS." Dr. Evans, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Great to be back.
You have written that anyone, political leader, religious cleric, or soccer mom who claims that the Islamic State is un-Islamic is only flaunting his or her ignorance. What do you mean by that?
Well, I know it's controversial, and there are, of course, many Muslims who disagree or would like to disagree with that assessment that we are making, but ISIS takes the Quran very seriously, all of it, not selectively, and other Islamic traditions such as the Hadith, and I think they understand it rightly. I think they understand what it says, and so they're imitating the first few generations of the Islamic movement that was spawned by Muhammad and his utterances, which, following his death, eventually were written out as the Quran, which means recitation, by the way. So it's what is to be recited. And so I think they are very, in a very thorough, systematic way, trying to implement the teaching of the Quran. It doesn't mean they're always right, of course. And I'm not implying that all of the Quran is about violence, aggressive expansion, killing non-believers, the kefirs, as they're called. But there is so much of this violence in the Quran, a judgmental, destructive attitude toward people who resist the spread of Islam. There's so much of that there that I think it really is naive to say that the Islamic State, or what we call ISIS or ISIL, is not Islamic. I think that's just political correctness on the part of the U.S. president, or perhaps naivete on the part of the average soccer mom. But at its core is this potential. Now, let me hasten to add, I know perfectly well, and I'm glad and relieved, that the vast majority of Muslims are not violent. The vast majority of Muslims, as far as I can tell, seem to be very uncomfortable with the activities of ISIS. So do not misunderstand. I'm not suggesting that the average Muslim is potentially a terrorist or something like that, because that's simply not true. But there is at the heart of the Quran this, I think it's a dark thing, this aggressive attitude. And this is why it's not hard to take it and put it into practice. And that's what we see going on at ISIS. So we suggest very provocatively at the beginning of our book that Muhammad would join ISIS. He not only would join it, he'd lead it.
Well, Dr. Evans, to kind of cut to the chase here, what's the goal of ISIS? What is their eventual plan if they're successful?
Well, it's an eschatological plan. A lot of people are surprised by that. Christians don't understand it, neither do secular people. But it's an Armageddon of sorts. They want the armies of the United States, Britain, and other powers to come to the Middle East and confront them. They believe Jesus will return. That's right, Jesus will return, waving the black flag of ISIS. He will defeat the enemies of ISIS. He'll kill the Christians and the Jews and establish a new order on earth that will be very much under the ISIS understanding of Sharia law. Jesus himself will pilgrimage or Hajj to Mecca. He'll marry, and it'll be a new era on this earth. And that's what they expect. And so there is an end game, and we need to keep that in mind.
The term caliphate is often tossed around when it comes to ISIS. What does that term mean?
It's like a kingdom. It's a theocratic kingdom. And the supreme leader of the Muslim world reigns over it, gives guidance, enforces Sharia law, enforces an Islamic lifestyle on earth.
So let's talk about how kind of ISIS sees itself in the course in this worldview. There's a caliphate to be established. There is an end to be ushered in, so to speak, as you said, an apocalyptic, eschatological goal here. What do they see? What role does ISIS play in that?
Well, ISIS is, of course, they're faithful. It's like the righteous remnant. They're the ultimate martyr, as it were. So they're the point on the spear. And so that's why they're urging faithful Muslims from around the world, committed, devout Muslims around the world, whatever their ethnic background, whatever part of the world they live in, to come to the Middle East and to lead the charge, as it were, and to establish this caliphate. And they see themselves as having pretty well succeeded. They want to expand further, but of course they're eager and itching for the great confrontation with the United States and other nations.
How do they view other Islamic majority nations? How do they view Western Muslims?
Well, with contempt in some cases. I think they see the vast majority of the Islamic population as in need of exhortation, a kick in the pants, as it were. Muslims who are peaceful, who compromise, who are moderate, they are faithless is what they are. And, of course, they're nominal Muslims who never read the Quran, don't know what it says, perhaps don't pray daily faithfully, and they face the possibility of judgment, too. And that's why, within all the sectarian violence that we see in the Middle East and elsewhere, most of the victims of Islamic violence are Muslims themselves. And some of them might be viewed as faithful Muslims that just happen to get caught in the crossfire, but that's okay. That's the way it is. They're martyrs for the cause in an accidental sort of way. Others, of course, deserve it. They don't shed any tears. They're noncommittal. They're nominal. And so they're just fodder. They need to be defeated and pushed away. So it's a clarion call to embrace the Islamic worldview and the Quran and its teachings more faithfully, to be more zealous for the faith.
You mentioned earlier Sharia law. How would you describe that system, where it is implemented now, and how ISIS would like to implement it worldwide?
Well, ISIS is implementing it in territories they conquer. And of course, in some Islamic countries that are very conservative, like Saudi Arabia itself, unlike, say, Turkey, which is very westernized and modernized in comparison, at least in the major cities, what they want, you know, women properly covered up, the burqa, you know, the hijab, the whole bit, the niqab, everything like that. And so what you only see when a woman's outside is just her eyes through a little slit where they can look out. And of course, boys and girls, you know, above a certain age, never date, never together. There are just real strict rules like that, as well as praying daily several times, and diet, observation, synagogue attendance, and right on the line. It's extremely strict and controlling. And what you have in most Islamic countries is just the adoption of some of those practices. As some people are walking on the street and they hear the call to prayer, they just simply step inside a shop for a few minutes so they're not noticed. And when prayer time's over, they're back on the street. But they want to enforce Sharia law in the strictest sense. And of course, it's a you know, you're seriously punished if you don't do it, if you don't conform.
Is it a system, Sharia, that has, we think of our justice system as having a foundation in some view of human rights that are largely taken to be inalienable? Sometimes we think about them deriving from a creator, and sometimes they're just documentary kind of things. But does Sharia law have as a foundation this view of human rights?
That's not how I would understand it. Sharia law is based on what is believed God has revealed to Muhammad via the angel Gabriel, and that's in the Quran. Sometimes how that's to be implemented and lived out, that's worked out in other sacred traditions. You need to know it's not just the Quran, but there are a couple of other bodies of literature. Among them, very importantly, would be the Hadith, stories and teachings of Muhammad himself and his life and so on, that are recalled and preserved by his friends and followers. And so it's ultimately a God-down thing. And so in the Western tradition, influenced by the Judeo-Christian point of view, we are made in the image of God, and that's what gives us these inalienable rights. And so some king, some tyrant cannot abridge those rights. They're simply there. A king does not confer those rights. They're there by being human. And so the Islamic understanding is in some points similar, but it is different in that it's simply a revealed list of laws, and that's what one conforms to. And if you don't, then you're out of the will of Allah as revealed in the Quran.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back on this Thursday afternoon, Thanksgiving Day, November the 26th, we'll continue talking about the theology that drives the ideology of ISIS. Dr. Evans is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College, and he's co-author of the new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
You might wonder, is it possible for my child with special needs to receive a rich classical Christian education? Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope answers yes. With a simply classical curriculum created by Cheryl and published by Memoria Press, there's no reason to withhold a beautiful education from any struggling student. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilk, and Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about the theology that drives the ideology of ISIS. Dr. Evans, I think what the average person looking at the headlines, looking at the recent attacks claimed credit for by ISIS in Paris and elsewhere, what puzzles them about this is the aggressive nature of this. They might be somewhat suspicious of Islam as a theology. They might even be a little bit, you know, wary of the Muslim immigration into Western Europe and things like that. But they don't understand the aggression. How would you explain it in terms that ISIS puts it?
Well, there's aggression because it's in the Hadith especially, although you have statements in the Quran itself about cutting off hands and feet and cutting off the head. And I think it is to be understood literally. Some might think it's more of a metaphor, the way Jesus speaks, for example, in Mark chapter 9, when he says, better to cut off a hand than because of that hand commit sin and find yourself cast into hell. But you do have a lot of brutal imagery like that in the Quran and the Hadith. Muhammad himself, and I think this is a major factor, Muhammad himself in the Hadith is lionized as a very aggressive man. I think a lot of this is unhistorical exaggeration. But, you know, he's sexually has a great deal of prowess, has sex with several women in one day, you know, that kind of thing, can kill people. And so he's kind of this sexual warrior as it is. And I think that sets the tone. Jesus comes across, you know, I mean, for Christians, it's working against the idea that Jesus is just meek and mild, a mamby-pamby, as it were, because he teaches, you know, love your enemies, turn the other cheek, pray for those who persecute you, and so on. You don't have that in the Quran, and you don't have that in the reminiscences, the memories of Muhammad, what he said and did and so on. So you have two extremely different founders. They couldn't contrast more. And so in my view, that is one of the reasons why, you know, Christians, oh, you want to be Christ-like, so you forgive those who insult you or hurt you. You pray for those who are enemies. You try to win them over through charity and through, you know, love and forgiveness and grace. But that just is not the template in the Islamic setting. And so Muhammad is this fierce warrior that'll whack off your head. And so I think that sets a different tone. Some of this you'll hear, you can read in the scholarship. Some of this is just my understanding in reading these materials and comparing them to how Jesus is present in the Gospels and the way Jesus himself as a model, influences Christian behavior in a way that is so different from Muhammad as model.
So So Muhammad is, in, I guess I could say, in some ways, idealized in this mindset. And then he becomes the model not only for the individual Muslim man's behavior, but he becomes the model for how Muslims ought to conduct their public affairs, their corporate affairs, too.
Yes, that's right. Now, of course, we want to be fair. I know if there were some Muslims on the program with us, they'd say, well, it doesn't have to be that way, and I would agree with them. But, you know, the question is that it's the right question to ask, and that is why do we have so much violence in Islam? And that's a very good question, because ISIS didn't invent the violence. We've had terrorist groups of one sort or another for a long time. We hear of violence happening all the time where no terrorist group is involved at all. You know, it's tragic. We'll hear from time to time in Ethiopia or in Egypt or in Pakistan or wherever, where it's an Islamic country, Christians are worshiping in a church on a Sunday, and then the church is attacked. Someone, people burst in and start firing machine guns and kill a couple dozen people, or set off a bomb, or burn the building down, and the same thing against synagogues. And this is a long, long history of this. And so you have to ask, why the violence? You know, Christianity's history is not spotless by any means, but it's a different history. And, in Northern Ireland, you had that sectarian violence between Protestants and Catholics, but the church as a whole was embarrassed by that and kept putting pressure and doing everything it could to get them to stop, and eventually succeeded. But unfortunately, that's not exceptional in the history of Islam. It's the norm. And so we've been seeing it, of course, all of our lifetime, especially in recent decades. And so I understand why people wonder, why is it that way? Why is this, this is supposed to be a religion that promotes belief in God, and surely that would result in more peaceful, more godly living. But in the Islamic setting, it doesn't seem to do that.
So as we go into this next break, it, with all that continuity with previous forms of Islam like this, what makes ISIS different from other Islamic terrorist organizations?
Well, that's a good question. And this is not simply a terrorist organization. In fact, I wouldn't even call it a terrorist organization. It's a terrorist state. It's a movement. It's a government. It is not just a terrorist group that hides in a hole and lashes out. It's open. It has conquered big chunks of Syria and Iraq. It is organized. It is income producing. It sells oil. It loots and sells artifacts. It receives millions of dollars a year in donations. It attracts thousands of recruits who go to the Middle East, and these are people from America, Canada, Britain, and countries all around the world. So this is not just a terrorist group, and I think that's how Western leaders misunderstood it and underestimated it, referred to it as the JV team, I do believe our president said, not that long ago, and a great underestimating and miscalculation.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We'll take another break, and when we come back on this Thursday, November the 26th, Thanksgiving Day, we'll continue our conversation with him. He has co-authored the new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand.
Christ Jesus, the image of the invisible God. For unto us a child is born. The titles of Christ, Good News of Great Joy, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christ-focused themes offered by Ad Crucem this Christmas. Shop adcrucem.com for greeting cards, gifts, housewares, ornaments, music, and much, much more. Available from adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through word and art. adcrucem.com, A-D-C-R-U-C-E-M.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India.
Sweden.
Egypt.
France.
Turkey.
Japan.
Australia.
Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong. Austria.
Finland.
Malaysia.
Singapore.
Bulgaria.
Korea.
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about the theology that drives ISIS. Dr. Evans, you spoke before the break about the attraction that ISIS has as a terrorist state. I mean, that's what you, I think, what you came down saying here, a terrorist state that is able to attract not only Muslims from around the Muslim world, but people who are previously non-Muslims from the Western world. What is the attraction there? What do they offer?
Well, I think they offer purpose. That's the main thing. Lots of people are talking about that. What exactly is it? Why do young women, for example, it's a men's club, really, when you think about it, yet young women will go, and of course they find that they've been lied to, and they end up in a really bad situation. But I think it appeals to people who have otherwise no purpose. They live in not necessarily poverty, although some do, but others, there's just no direction. And so they're Muslims in countries that don't seem to be getting anywhere. There are people who, as you say, decide they get radicalized. They're converted. They begin attending a mosque, and they're radicalized by Muslims in that mosque, or perhaps in some cases, a religious person, a cleric, a mullah or imam, sometimes referred to as these preachers of hate, who urge young people, inspire them to strike out against a very corrupt West. And so whatever the reason, it's a purpose, it's a mission, it's to become part of something that's going to change the world. And, you and I growing up, you know, the appeals to become, have meaning in life, you know, whether it's to save the environment or save the whale, is some kind of a purpose. And I think that's a major part of the call.
I have noticed, in addition to kind of the typical vilification of Western culture that you'll find, I was looking through the ISIS magazine online
It's really an experience and really rather difficult to understand from kind of a Western non-Islamic perspective. But I've noticed that they among other things, they depict the West as not only crusaders, but as racist. What role does that accusation play in their ideology?
Well, yeah, and I think it just what it does is it helps justify this campaign against the West, because it is pretty horrific. It's one thing to have an army in Iraq and Syria trying to maintain your borders, trying to establish a state where the Quran is, practiced, as it were, thoroughly and completely and consistently. But what about these death squads, we saw, not that long ago in Paris or in Mali, or from 9/11 in New York 15 years ago? What is with this, this kind of thing? And so this helps justify it. And so they're inspiring these young people to strike out against a very corrupt system. It's satanic. And, of course, you get a lot of cherry picking. And so the very worst that you can find in the West, and I've had this come up in debates I've had very recently, where they'll say, well, you Christians burned witches by the thousands. You did this, you did that. And so, you got the segregationism and the racism against blacks or some other groups and so on. And so that you get a cherry picking. It's like somebody looking for just the warts in the history of a certain society. And, of course, from their mind, the United States, Canada, they're Christian countries. So whatever they do wrong, this is a reflection and a failure of the Christian church. So that's how they do it. And it's just a world difference in perspective. And that's why I think Western leaders find ISIS so difficult to understand. And if we don't understand them, if we don't defeat them at the ideological level, then we're just going to be, I think, we can't defeat them simply militarily. You can blow them up, you can destroy something, but people will just keep joining up. There has to be a victory at the ideological level, so we have to understand what it is they're saying, doing, and why they think the way they do.
You mentioned earlier the role of clerics in the recruitment, but also kind of in maintaining the ideology. How would you describe that in Islam in general, and then for ISIS in particular?
Well, yeah, there you go. And so it'd be like a fiery sermon that a Christian preaches, where he says it's time to get serious, it's time to, answer the summons, from God. It's time to live a life that is consistent with the teaching of Scripture. It's time, and you can imagine an exhortation like that. Well, you get that these preachers who are condemning society. I mean, a Christian preacher might say, look what's happening to society. It's a cesspool, moral relativity, this, that, and the other thing. But the difference is that the Christian preacher does not incite followers to go out and burn down brothels, blow up, sinful, movie houses, and things like that. And some people, they've attacked abortion doctors and so on, and most of the Christian community says, hey, that's wrong. You don't do that. That's murder. You don't do that. But in the context of some mosques, in some settings, the preachers of hate incite these young people to do just that, to volunteer for missions that result in killing people, blowing things up, like the bomb that blew up and brought down the Russian jet over the Sinai not that long ago, these kinds of things. And so they volunteer to do it. That's why Israel had to build a wall to keep people from the West Bank. And these, in some cases, are children, even girls, talked into wearing suicide vests and just wandering into a place where Jews are gathered together and then detonating themselves. And so a lot of that I lay at the feet of these clerics. They ought to know better. They're doing it. I see it as evil, encouraging people to commit these kinds of crimes.
How does ISIS then view the United States in particular? I understand that the West is kind of a Christendom, but what's special about America, or is there anything in their view special about America?
Well, I think special only in the sense that the United States is a it's a powerhouse and leads the West. And so, you know, to use the parlance that was so popular in Iran, you know, the United States is the great Satan. And a lot of people think that's an Old Testament word, but it's actually a Persian word, ultimately. And Satan is one who opposes what? Opposes God. And so the United States is that great Satan. Of course, the U.S. military superiority frustrates Islamic Jihad frequently in one way or another, but they feel that someday God will intervene. As we were saying at the top of the program, there will be this great Islamic Armageddon, and even the mighty United States will be defeated.
Now, you had mentioned kind of the history of some of these things, and it probably would be a good idea to review a little bit of the history, not just with respect to Muhammad, but with respect to Islam in general. Is what we're seeing in ISIS generally consistent with Islam throughout history for the last, since 600 or so AD?
I think it is. I think, you know, we've seen a passive Islam in recent centuries, and so it might seem a little bit unusual, but the Ottoman Empire, you know, provided a lot of stability for centuries until it finally was broken up at the aftermath of World War I. But if you go back to the very beginning, right up to the time of Muhammad's death and then beyond it, you have conquest after conquest after conquest. The church in the Middle East was almost entirely destroyed, and North Africa was invaded. Spain was invaded. We're now into the late 7th, early 8th century. And right on into the 8th century, half of France, the southern half, was occupied. And finally, at Tours, there was a great victory for the Christian armies, and the Islamic armies were defeated. And then slowly but surely, it took a long time, the Islamic armies were driven out of France and driven out of Spain. But of course, they remained in control of North Africa and the Middle East. And then, the Crusades occurred later, about 200 and some years later, they got underway because Christian pilgrims were being murdered, monasteries burned down, churches destroyed, and so on. And so there was 250 years of conflict in the Middle East and trying to deal with that. Now, I'm not trying to justify the Crusades. I'm not saying that was the best way to deal with it. But it was Islamic aggression in the first place that created that context. Then, again, Europe was threatened after that, invaded Budapest, you know, what we call Hungary today, conquered, and the armies of Islam were at the gates of Vienna. A lot of people don't realize it, of course. Martin Luther believed that Christians needed to read the Quran and recognize more clearly the nature of the threat. And, of course, Martin Luther is now in the early 16th century. Brilliant man, translates the Quran into German, one of the very first translations, maybe the first translation, into a modern language or a European language. And, and when I debate Muslim scholars, all of these things are forgotten. All they talk about is George Bush attacking Iraq. Look at the mess he made. But the context and the history gets forgotten. So what I see in ISIS is a renewal of that original vision, the 7th and 8th century conquests, expansion violently in the Middle East, in anticipation, of course, of this great Armageddon.
Is this why, when you look in their literature, a Western leader, the American president, even Pope Francis, they're often referred to as Crusader Pope or Crusader President?
Oh, sure, because that's a pejorative language. We Westerners aren't, you know, we use Crusader usually in a different sort of way. The Billy Graham Crusades, right? That doesn't conjure up any violence or anything like that. It's like a mission. It's being on a mission with a purpose. But they like to use that word crusade because in their books, that was real bad because they're supposed to be the aggressor. They're the ones that expand and conquer. They don't like getting pushed back. Muslims will still refer to Spain with its Islamic name. Did you know that? That's why Muslim countries, in fact, do not recognize Israel. That's a pushback. I've looked at maps of the Middle East in Islamic countries. There are no boundaries for Israel. Jerusalem is identified, and if there's any reference at all, it's simply occupied territories. And this is the Islamic mindset. And so the Crusades, see, that's bad. I mean, here are these Christians pushing back and actually occupying Israel and Jerusalem for about 200 years. That's bad. It's inexcusable. It's supposed to go the other way with the armies of Islam conquering. See, that's what, look what's going on in North Africa. These armies driving into Chad and the Sudan in northern Nigeria. It's become so dangerous there. A conference that I was to attend a couple of years ago just had to be canceled because hit squads going after Christian meetings, attacking churches and so on. That's the Islamic aggression that I'm talking about. And it's not just all ISIS, as some like to say, but it's a many-headed hydra that just keeps popping up everywhere. And it's and so that's why in our book, Jesus and the Jihadis, we talk about this, the aggressive, violent nature that's at the heart of Islam, which fortunately most Muslims don't follow. But these fanatics are, and it's because I think they're very much enthused with eschatological ideas.
Although, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, although ISIS itself is a real moneymaker, I mean, they are flush with cash. And operate on a shoestring budget, but have enormous surpluses for an organization or a group their size. It seems as though Islam in general, especially radicalized Islam, tends to flourish. You had mentioned sub-Saharan Africa, tends to flourish where there is poverty, where there is social unrest already, and tends to be kind of attenuated and mitigated in more wealthy countries, more politically organized countries. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree with that assessment, and I think that is a factor in some of the apologetic and some of the drive that goes on. Muslims in Western settings, Europe or the United States, and they're more affluent, I think they're being accused of just simply having sold out. They've become soft. They've become, you know, middle class. They're affluent, and therefore they've lost their commitment. They've been bought out, as it were, bribed by money, as it were, and of course, you know, people who own businesses and own homes usually are not going to be the radical types. They don't want to put at risk what it is they have, and so it is easier then to recruit people who live in poverty, people who are in a situation that's hopeless. There is a sexual dimension, too, here that we haven't touched on that's important. In most Islamic countries, you have polygamy. And so, you know, the men who have the 2, 3, 4 wives are in the top part. There's, you know, so it's the top one-third of the economic scale. The men at the bottom third, they end up with no wives. And so that's part of the promise, you know, come to the ISIS, come to the Islamic State, and you'll have a woman. Of course, die in battle, and you'll have the virgins in paradise, you know, in heaven forever. And so there's a sexual dimension to it, too. It strikes us Westerners as weird, bizarre. But it's a major factor. So you have a man, he's in his 20s, he's frustrated, he knows he'll never have a wife, he doesn't have a good job, he's poor, he sees no future. And a preacher of hate persuades him that, you know, risk your life, join ISIS, find a purpose, and you'll be fulfilled. And I can see how that attracts thousands every year who then, of course, make their way to the Middle East to join the armies of ISIS.
Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. We're talking about the theology driving the ideology of ISIS on this Thursday afternoon, November the 26th, Thanksgiving Day. He is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College, co-author of the book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS.
The Church's Music from the 20th century.
17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Expert guests. Expansive topics. Extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I chose to write about a choir director who's Lutheran and who's a big city girl but has moved to a small town.
Katie Schuerman talking about her new novel, The Choir Immortal.
I really wanted to address suffering in the present tense, this theology of the cross.
You can find out more about The Choir Immortal at issuesetc.org or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Choir Immortal by Katie Schuerman.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the theology driving the ideology of ISIS. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest, co-author of the new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. Let's talk a little nuts and bolts here. You had mentioned before kind of, you know, making the argument that this isn't just a terrorist organization. This is, in fact, an Islamic terrorist state and a military force as well, this formidable military force, at least with respect to its neighbors, quite obviously, because it's taken full advantage of the of some of the chaos that's in the Middle East there as well. But how is this funded? Where does the money come from, as far as we can tell?
Well, three sources that are the most obvious. There probably are other sources, but and some of the sources could be internal. But external sources come from donations, $40, $50 million a year. Millions of dollars from the sale of oil, and that's why some are calling for just bombing the oil production facility so that they don't have a product to export. And also looting, not just artifacts, but, you know, conquered peoples, looting, stealing, and then selling on the black market or however they do it. And it's just millions of dollars per year of stolen merchandise and artifacts and so on, some of them quite valuable. How long all that can carry on, I don't know. But that's how they've managed to fund themselves. And of course, the Islamic State's not that old. The U.S. very precipitously withdrew from Iraq and might have made political sense from President Obama's point of view. It didn't make any military sense. And of course, it created this instant vacuum which the founders of ISIS quickly filled. And so in the last 3.5 years or so, it's just completely got out of hand. What their financial picture will look like 2 or 3 years from now is hard to say. But that's what it's been lately, and it's been enough. Don't forget, too, that the non-ISIS armies, Islamic armies that have opposed them, the locals, have mostly fled in their face of their advances and left behind all this U.S. equipment, tanks and rifles and machine guns and bullets and bombs and so on. Most of this has just simply fallen into the hands of ISIS. So they've been heavily armed as a gift, as it were, thanks to the U.S.-trained locals who simply ran away. So we have these awful stories of where just 500 ISIS fighters capture a city defended by 10,000 supposedly trained soldiers that are, you know, and they just run off. So that's probably why the United States, Canada, Britain, and other countries will have to have soldiers with boots on the ground, because the locals just keep failing to do the job.
You had mentioned earlier in our conversation that the Islamic worldview, but especially that of ISIS, has a place, a rather a pivotal place, for at least what they think of as Jesus, Isa, in their apocalyptic vision. How did they manage to hijack Jesus?
Well, it's a systemic hijacking. You ought to read. There are many places where Jesus shows up in the Quran. Probably the most instructive would be Surah number 4. The Quran is arranged with the longest chapters of surahs at the beginning, and then as it progressively gets shorter and shorter. There are 114 altogether. And so it's a lot of material. It's a big book. It's almost as big as the Old Testament. And so Jesus is scattered out and here and there and about. It's largely topically arranged, although not obvious, it's not always clear what the arrangement is. And so Muhammad was fascinated with Jesus. He liked to talk about him. He's a benchmark in a lot of ways. Muhammad regarded Jesus as the second greatest prophet. Jesus is second only to Muhammad himself. One of the greatest prophecies that Jesus made, you can read it in the Quran, he predicts the coming of Ahmad, which is from the same root from which we get the word Muhammad. And so Jesus, predicted Muhammad's coming. So that really makes him great. He is virgin born. He did predict perform miracles. But Jesus is not God's son. He's not divine. And he did not die on the cross. A lot of people don't realize that. That's actually denied. It only appeared that he did. And something else, in fact, happened. And he was taken up into heaven to be with God. And so Jesus is a major factor and player in the Quran. So are other biblical people. So I would put that, to answer your question, put it in context. It's like Israel's story, Abraham, for example, Moses and others, and the Christian story. These are hijacked and rewritten. And not on the basis of historical documents, not on the basis of new knowledge, not on the basis of a need to fix history and get it better. No, it's on the basis of what is believed is revelation. And revelation trumps everything. And so you can say we got 4 first century gospels that tell the story. That doesn't matter. A 7th century revelation trumps 4 first century gospels. And so that's just the way it works. I know that. I've debated Muslims. I've read the literature. You can't get anywhere by simply talking like a regular historian and saying, look, here's the evidence. That doesn't matter. The claim of revelation centuries later trumps first century historical evidence.
Finally, with only about a minute here, you talked earlier about not just military solutions. Well, those might certainly be necessary, but ideological confrontation of ISIS. What, in a nutshell, with about a minute, does that look like, Dr. Evans?
I think talking about some of the things I'm saying right now, and that's just saying, look, this is what the Quran teaches. Are you aware of that? This is what Jesus actually teaches. I think we can get along pretty well with Western Muslims. And by the way, many Muslims are becoming Christians, not just in the West, but in the Middle East too. In fact, it's been observed that more Muslims have become Christians in the last 10 years than in previous centuries. And so I think there is reach out and reason with the mind and turn the other cheek, follow Jesus' teaching, and don't just think that if we keep bombing them, that's the solution.
Dr. Craig Evans is professor of New Testament at Acadia Divinity College, co-author of the new book, Jesus and the Jihadis, Confronting the Rage of ISIS. You can find out more about Jesus and the Jihadis under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Evans, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd. Great being with you.
Folks, with a little more than 5 weeks left in 2015, we're approximately $100,000 short of projected expenses. Our listeners have always helped us make up that difference every year we've been back since we came back. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. You can also make a financial contribution by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Here's the address again. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping Issues Etc. in mind when you consider your year-end giving this year. With only 5 weeks left, we keep you posted about how much we need to go to make our projected expenses. The number right now is at about $100,000. Help us as you have in the past. Issuesetc.org or send that check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. In the next hour, we'll talk with Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy about the Lord's Prayer petition, "Give us this day our daily bread."
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In Hosea 4, we read, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." At the CLCC, we educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Christians would if they learned what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website at theclcc.org. See what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And encourage your pastors to hold an event in your area. For more information, go to theclcc.org.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.